Hey, you are listening to the Victims and Villains podcast, a podcast extension of the nonprofit that creates content to educate and engage individuals like yourselves on mental health awareness and suicide prevention through pop culture. My name is Captain Nostalgia, and on this episode, we are sailing the high seas with the film that started off the blockbuster franchise that is Pirates of the Caribbean, The Curse of the Black Pearl. But I also have to preface this one by saying this podcast may make you want to quit your day job, become a pirate. It may make you question why all the rum is gone. And it may make you, most of all, sing A Pirate's Life for Me. Please help me in welcoming some friends of ours from the Twitch community, Mr. and Mrs. Justin and Heather Moe. Hello.
Hello, hello.
Hello.
you can't see this right now because this is an audio podcast, but I promise I will post clips of this onto our YouTube and Instagram. Justin is full head to toe right now in Jack Sparrow attire. It's quite impressive.
He has fully embraced the inner Jack Sparrow in his life.
Everyone says I look like Johnny Depp, and I don't see it, but everyone else does. So I embrace it.
How long did it take to like put together all the everything?
This is an outfit that's probably been a compilation of costume artifacts over the last, I don't know, since the At World's End came out. What year was that?
2009, I believe.
2009. Wow. Yeah, so or since 2009, I've been like piecing that. This thing together. Yeah. that was the first time I ever did a Jack Sparrow look. I realized that I could, if I had a hat and a pirate shirt, I could pull it off. So. Yeah.
Well, before we jump into talking about pirates, I know this because you guys have done a couple of streams with us. I've also caught a couple of your streams. While we're on the topic of cosplay, that is something that you guys incorporate into doing streams. Can you guys call it, it's kind of, which is quite unique. Where did the idea for cosplay and streams kind of correlate and kind of start from?
Yeah. So when I started streaming, I was trying to come up with some fun content that would kind of scratch the itch of theater, because I was a theater person. I studied theater in college. I was a performance major. I worked professionally for a while after I graduated, before I met this guy, got married, and had babies. So Twitch kind of like scratched that itch, if you will, of theater. And so doing costumes was something that I've always enjoyed and felt like it kind of fit in to satisfy that side of me. And so I started doing it as kind of just a monthly thing, as like, we'll do some sort of cosplay goal and we'll just go from there. But then I think about a year ago, actually, almost exactly a year, I went to my first Comic-Con and went as full cosplays and just fell in love with it. And so now it's become like my primary content creation is cosplay stuff. And then Twitch is kind of just a part of it now.
I'm just a nerd. I'm just a pop culture gamer, everything nerd, and I've been wearing costumes since I was a kid, just around the house. That's pretty much what I did. So I graduated from there into trying to create actual characters and model my costumes off of characters from TV shows or video games. Because I was a huge gamer growing up, so that it's just always kind of stuck with me. And then when I discovered Comic Cons and the like, then it was kind of a full speed ahead, go all out or nothing type of approach there.
Yeah.
Man, cosplay is such a commitment. What is a cosplay that both of you guys, what is the least favorite cosplay you've ever done? What is the most favorite you guys return to?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think my favorite that I've done that like I always keep going back to is Wanda, Scarlet Witch, like classic Scarlet Witch, and then variations of that. I've done everything, because now I'm also 6 months pregnant. So like I've been doing like pregnant Wanda cosplays and stuff. So anything variation of her I really like. My least favorite that I've done... that's so hard. I think I tried to do a Batgirl, like comic book style, and it just did not turn out the way I hoped it would.
Yeah.
It was a lot of like the pop art kind of style where I did my face like that, but it just didn't ever quite hit the way I hoped it would.
Oh, okay. Cause I was trying to like envision like what era of Batgirl you're like specifically addressing. Cause there's so many different costume variations of, and so to like incorporate like the classic like pulpy art of like the 60s and 70s, that's taking it that's a true level of detail right there.
Someday I might go back and try it again, but not anytime soon.
My two go-to cosplays are Jack Sparrow and Link from Legend of Zelda, and it really depends on what my facial hair looks like. If I have a full beard, I think I opt for something like Darth Jar Jar, because I can't think of anything that I've done a full beard with for a cosplay yet.
I'm sure we'll come up with something.
I don't really have a least favorite, but my most challenging is Darth Jar Jar, because that full latex mask from the early 2000s when the movie, well, from what it came out in 1999, I think. The mask is from that era when episode one first came out. So I still have the mask. It's thick latex. It is a sauna inside that mask, and it's hard to see. So I do it for the fans. Not anybody, but Star Wars fans at Comic-Cons will walk by me and say, I'm not worthy, Darth Jar Jar. Things like that.
That's amazing. Do you have a picture of the Darth Jar Jar?
We have pictures and
I do.
Okay.
I could even
I'm gonna need to see right those.
Now. Yes.
Yeah. I'm gonna need to see those after we get done.
Yeah.
Well, where can people find you guys and your channel and all of your adventures? Yeah.
Totally. So I am on pretty much every social media platform, as well as Patreon and Fanhouse, as Keyline Pixie. So KeylimePixie with an underscore after that. Primarily I'm on Instagram, TikTok, Twitch, and then Patreon and Fanhouse.
I am The Laughing Raptor on YouTube, and also The Laughing Raptor _ on Instagram. Because someone else has the name The Laughing Raptor and they're not using it. But yes, The Laughing Raptor. And
you're also on Twitch now, too.
I'm on Twitch
as Laughing Raptor.
As Laughing Raptor. I am the OG Laughing Raptor on Twitch.
Well, this podcast service proof, right?
Yes. Yes.
All right, we'll provide all those links in the descriptions below where you guys can follow Justin and Heather to do this. But let's jump in and set the sails with our broken compass and one round in the chamber. Let's talk before we get into this, because I feel like this is a movie that all three of us grew up with, because we were like prime demographic when this thing came out. This was the very first, I'm gonna nerd out here as a cinephile, this is the very first PG-13 movie Disney ever stood by and released it. This is the only time that they never sent it to one of their other subsidiary studios. They stood by it, and I just remember like falling in love with this movie the first time I saw it, and I was like walking around my entire house. It's like I think I was like 12 when this movie came out, and like just kept doing like all the weird Johnny Depp mannerisms and had like fake swords, and would just, it was great. This movie is a movie that I just constantly keep revisiting. I feel like this was the first ever film franchise I really fell in love with. And so what does this movie, where were you guys, like what was this movie like growing up for you guys in your houses?
Well, I'll go first because I'm sure his is longer.
Sure.
I think I was living in California at the time, and I was probably pretty young when it came out. I'm trying to remember. Was it 99 or 2001?
It was 2002.
Because it's 19 years old. Okay.
2002.
So this movie, I think we had like rented it, because we had owned kind of like a small place where we could do projections of movies. So we did a whole like night of Pirates of the Caribbean when it came out, and we watched a projection in this grand ballroom. And I think that that movie really set off my love for costuming and just elaborate costumes. I mean, everything from Elizabeth Swann and all of her different costumes throughout the whole movie, Jack Sparrow and his like definition of what a pirate is now. Mm-hmm. Like he just changed the game for that. But I think that's kind of like what it means to me, is it's really inspired my love for costumes and costume making and that genre of period piece without it being just classical period piece.
Yeah. I have a very fond memory of being in a small movie theater, seeing Pirates of the Caribbean for the first time. And my grandfather was there as well. He had actually the year before had a stroke, which caused him to be more wheelchair bound. He was going through therapy and trying to walk again, he lost the use of his left arm. But so he wasn't as mobile. He didn't get out as much. But I remember him talking about, I want to go see the new Pirates movie that's being announced. And so my memory is getting to be in the theater with him and the rest of our family watching this movie. And it pretty much just encapsulated my love for adventure films, adventure stories. And little did I know that it was going, the whole essence of piratiness that that movie just radiated would inspire my own stories and my own characters and my own little worlds that I would create. And not all of them were necessarily piratey worlds, but they would have piratey characters in them. And it was all inspired by this movie. Not to mention the musical score that's obviously become so iconic for all these years would be huge inspirations for my own storytelling and filmmaking in the future.
God, the score by Hans Zimmer on this one is one of the best of the 21st century. Like, I think that is like probably top three like Hans Zimmer scores that he's ever done, because there's something about how grand and theatrical that score feels, to where it almost feels like you're back in the sword and sandals era of history, where, you know, you don't feel like you're just watching a simple movie, but you're like, that score like transports you to that time. It's not just the it's the way that the everything is incorporated with the costuming, is like you said, Heather, but also like the score and the acting and just the entire worlds that Gore Verbinski what kind of like mapped out as the director and scores. Probably one of the only scores I can listen to from Disney that is not a musical by itself. This score is insanely good.
Interesting fact about the original soundtrack, and I'm curious the story behind this. The original soundtrack for Pirates 1 is actually credited to Klaus Badelt, but Hans Zimmer went on to do the rest of the scores for the rest of the Pirates movies. I think that Hans Zimmer actually had more of a hand in the first one than we realize, but just gave the credit to Klaus Badelt for whatever reason. That's what I've heard. But if you look it up, it'll have Klaus's name there, but it's Hans Zimmer for the rest of them. So it's interesting. I don't think that Klaus Badelt necessarily came up with the iconic theme. I think that he probably had a lot of help from Hans Zimmer.
Interesting. I feel like I just revoked my cinephile card with that one.
Well, I don't have all the details, so you know, I'm not a master at all of this, but I do know that because I haven't done all of the research, but I have noticed how Hans Zimmer seems to be kind of at the helm of it all, but he also I think has composers work under him.
Yeah,
and for whatever reason, back in 2002. it was Klaus who got the credit. But if you look in the little booklet, I think that Hans Zimmer is listed in there. So
it's wild. All right. Well,
yep.
On the flip side of that, you know, we'll be recomposing the films that would make up the Depth Dive series. You look at like 2000 to like present, like all of Johnny Depp's like most iconic roles is Captain Jack Sparrow. Like this is just kind of like, he's done other movies, but when you talk about Johnny Depp in the 21st century, it's Captain Jack Sparrow. You talk about him in the 80s and the 90s, you get Nightmare on Elm Street, Edward Scissorhands, Ed Wood, you know, but like this was kind of the movie that really kind of solidified him and really introduced him to a entirely new generation, you know, being in a world now where the whole Amber Heard case is over with, and there's talks and there's rumblings of more Captain Jack Sparrow content, whether that's a Disney Plus series or a Six Pirates movie. You know, it's because, you know, this for him has kind of been like the staple of his career the past 20 years.
Totally. Yeah, I saw this really, we've been keeping up with Johnny Depp stuff because we live about 45 minutes away from where the trial took place. So he went to it 3 days.
Nice. I got in once.
He only got in once, but he got in.
That's a whole nother podcast talking about that.
I've been keeping up with a lot of lawyers on Twitter and people who are just interested in Johnny Depp, and like, it was yesterday, I read this whole article about how he got into the Pirates franchise. He was in talks, his agent and manager, and of course Disney, they were all talking about it. And he, at the time, his daughter was like 3 or 4 years old, like super young. They were living in France. And he had pretty much only been watching cartoons for like 4 years at that point. And he was like, gosh, in cartoons, you can get away with literally anything and it's accepted by the audience. And so when they came to him to talk about Pirates, he was like, you know what? We should do anything and see if the audience will accept it. And he went above his agent and above his manager with these high profile agents at Disney. And they were like, let's do it. You seem game. Let's do it. And his agent called and was like, what did you just do? They just offered you this job. I didn't even know what was happening.
Yeah.
Cause he's just Johnny Depp.
It's amazing how he didn't just create an iconic role or an iconic pirate character. He basically embodied a redefining of the essence of the pirate genre.
Absolutely.
And you can see that because everyone talks about how you take away Johnny Depp as Captain Jack Sparrow and you don't have Pirates of the Caribbean. He literally defined that world and defined that series by the portrayal of his character.
Yeah, and he took pirates from being just the bad guy, like Captain Hook or, you know,
Long John Silver.
Like, they're just bad guys to, like, suave, debonair, kind of sexy guys. And you're like...
Mm-hmm. notice how in the costume shops, up until that point, the pirate costume was the peg leg, the eye patch, the skull and crossbones hat that was, like, sideways, you know, with a feather or something, and then the hook. It was all these things that we had seen in pirate pop culture up until this point. After Pirates of the Caribbean came out, what did you see? It was called Caribbean Pirate. And it looked like the dreads and the hat and the frilly shirt and the kind of scruffy vest and the mustache. Like they would sell mustache kits for you to put the mustache and goatee on. Because that's what a pirate became.
Yeah.
But it's interesting too, like you talk about, share the story about how he kind of like talked to his you know, went to these like the execs at Disney and tried to like pitch him this, because like the Pirates franchise has become like literally anything. It's one of those very real things that kind of like, we're just going to throw something at the wall and just see if it sticks. Because you look at this first film, Curse of the Black Pearl, it is largely it's a pirate story meets a ghost story. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you have these like crossovers of the Swords and Sandals, but then you also have this like kind of like PG-13 horror film kind of like woven into this story. And you get into the second one and it's a revenge tale. It expands the world. It is a your bad guy is Davy Jones, a squid monster, for lack of a better word. Then the last one is this, like, it's a war. The third one, it's a war epic. And then you get into the fourth one and you get
mermaids.
And the fifth one, you're traveling to the is the fifth or fourth one the Fountain of Youth?
Well, the fourth one is the Fountain of Youth with the mermaids and the preacher who falls in love with a mermaid and Blackbeard. The fifth one was Salazar,
Javier Bardem.
Which kind of pulled back more to the ghost story concept.
They kind of tied it back in.
The story has become like kind of literally more than just this simple lore that we're introduced to it during the Black Pearl entry.
They definitely, especially in 3, decided, okay, let's just open the floodgates and let's go full fantasy. You know, and I mean full fantasy. Like, we're going to go multiple Jacks. We're going to go Calypso, who gets huge and then turns into a bunch of little crabs. And, like, we're the first one, you're right. It's a pretty simple ghost story with cursed gold. And I think that's what makes that movie so iconic and kind of separate from the rest. You can watch that one and have a great, grand old time, and then you can be done if you want. Or if you want to open the floodgates and you want to continue, then you can enter a whole another world of fantasy. And they do edge into that with Davy Jones being kind of the cursed squid pirate. But you know, it's still, I think, a little bit grounded in that piratey reality. And then the third one, they go all the way fantasy and pirate merge together. So, I enjoy all of them. I think they're a ride of joy. Yeah, that's a great way to put it. I just, you know, not every one is the best put together film. I think the number 4 with, which is On Stranger Tides.
Yeah.
Where you have Penelope Cruz in there. You don't have Will or Elizabeth in there. It's a little bit of an offshoot. It's okay. But I still like it as part of the series. You know, I don't mind them continuing to create them. I will say that if Johnny Depp's not in it at all, that's kind of hard to accept as a Pirates of the Caribbean movie. I feel like I'm just watching a pirate movie at that point.
Yeah, I think you said it perfect earlier. Like, Pirates of the Caribbean doesn't exist without Johnny Depp. There is no, and like, you know, we heard a project announcement of a Margot Robbie coming into Pirates. We'll see if that still happens with, you know, the way the fates are kind of landing right now. But no, like you look at 4 and you look at 5, despite whatever you want to say about them being good or not, I am still partial to part 4. I think On Stranger Tides is a really fun film.
I would love to hear since that's your favorite, I would love to hear why.
It's not my favorite.
Oh, okay.
It's a fun film. I had a fun time with it.
To be fair, I only saw it once, so I need to see it again to refresh my judgment on it.
Well, I think that's what makes it so special. The whole Pirates franchise is each movie can easily, you know, someone could be like, oh, I really like this one, and this one I wasn't so sure about, but then the next person's like, oh, well, I love this one. There's something for everyone in it.
I think that Blackbeard's beard should have been bigger.
Well, yeah.
just you but know, little detail.
But it's Ian McShane. I mean, you can't go wrong with Ian McShane.
That's true. And I liked how they had the little details of the embers in the beard.
Yeah.
That would actually be a tactic that they would use to light grenades I guess they'd be grenades. They'd be like, you know, pirate versions of grenades with the fuse, you know, you light it and you throw it.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, the we get to see it in this first film too, where it's in like the final battle, and Will and Elizabeth are fighting the three guys, and they essentially pull them out of the moonlight, shove a golden rod into the center guy, and throw the bomb in there.
Uh-huh,
it's like every time I watch this movie, I always like will just as loud as I can scream not fair, because that's like one of my favorite parts in this movie. I don't know why it's always not just fair. Stuck with me.
Yes. I don't know if you have a certain agenda, on questions that you have or a certain direction that you want to go on this, but I could talk about so many different aspects of it. I was going to go into Barbossa, but I don't know if you're ready to go into Barbossa.
Oh dude, I want to go into Barbossa because I've seen Jeffrey Rush in a couple other movies, and they all are like, you know, I understand like he's an Oscar winner and like he's very respected in the world of cinema. He will always be Barbossa.
Totally.
And like the line that I think is probably most iconic from this, at least to me and my friends growing up, was, you know, you best start believing in ghost stories, Miss Turner. You're in one.
the code is more like guidelines than actual rules. Welcome to the Black Pearl, Miss Turner.
I love it so much.
It's like he has.
He was perfect.
So many wonderful little gems of moments as that character.
I
was watching one of a featurette on Disney Plus, or I think I was watching it was about the props. Jeffrey Rush didn't want a hat at first, and the costumer had to convince him to try hats on, and he tried on the hat that's eventually in the movie, and he puts it on and he's like, "Oh, this actually looks pretty good, doesn't it?" And she's like, "Yes, it does." So, and I'm glad, because that hat is not a traditional pirate hat that you see up until this point in any pirate culture or film culture. It's that wide brim all the way around. It's not one of these types of hats. It's not maybe in a Captain Hook hat, but the front was even, or the side or the front was turned up for Captain Hook. So this was a very cool, unique look that was different than other pirate looks you've seen.
Yeah.
To really set him apart.
Totally.
As the villain.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
If you or someone you know is listening to this podcast right now, and you're struggling with suicide, addiction, self-harm, or depression, we encourage you guys to please reach out. This is the heartbeat of why we do what we do. Suicide is currently the 10th leading cause of death in the United States, and as of this recording, there are 132 suicides that take place each and every day on American soil. And when you scale back internationally, there are 800,000 successful suicides. That is one death roughly every 40 seconds. So if you or someone you know is struggling, you guys can go to victimsandvillains.net/hope. That resource is going to be right in the description wherever you guys are currently listening or streaming this. There you'll find resources that include the National Suicide Lifeline, which is 1-800-273-8255. You can also text HELP to 741-741. We also have a plethora of other resources, including churches, getting connected with counselors, LGBT resources like the Trevor Project, and also Veteran Hotline as well. Please, if you hear nothing else in the show, understand that you, yes, you listening to this right now, have value and worth. We get it. Suicide, depression, mental health, these are hard topics, and the stigma around them doesn't make it any easier. But please consider the resources right in the descriptions below, wherever you guys are listening, because once again, you have value and you have worth. So please stay with us. Yeah, I absolutely love Barbossa in this. To your point earlier about this film is a franchise. It's like you could just stay at Curse of Black Pearl and then, you know, move on. As the older I get, I was like, I remember seeing the second one in theaters and being like, oh man, like, oh no way, they brought Barbossa back.
What? Oh my, that moment was like, yep.
And then, then I get older and then I'm like, nah, they probably should have just like stopped at like the first film. I don't know if you feel the same. I'm just like, I thought he's so good in here. Then he kind of like just becomes a caricature of himself by the end of the franchise.
I do feel that to some extent, where there's a lot of, there are some things that like, I'm like, did you, you just couldn't come up with anything else? Like,
right. Well, the thing that I think felt out of place for me that I remember is it's in the third one when they are comparing periscopes. Not periscopes, telescopes.
Telescopes.
What?
Telescopes?
Is it telescope? There's another word for it, and it's in arc as well. It's a
spyglass.
Spyglass. There we go. A spyglass.
Oh, gotcha.
They're comparing spyglasses. And they're like, you know, trying to one up each other, you know, keep coming up with a bigger one and bigger one. That moment, and then what are you doing?
Yeah.
What are you doing? What are you doing? Like, I'm like, okay, this feels like this was a moment that they were just joking around on set. And then the director or the writers decided to just make it a thing. Because that does happen in movies. You know?
Yeah.
I'm like, this feels out of place, even for Barbossa to be this goofy. And going back to the first movie, they wrote the movie just to be a Pirates of the Caribbean movie. Johnny Depp brought the Jack Sparrow-ness. Jeffrey Rush brought the Barbossa-ness and all the characters to follow. After that, I feel like they started to write that stuff in, which then just eventually got over-exaggerated even more when the actors brought it onto screen, because it was already written supposed to be that way.
Right.
Versus just writing something straight and letting the characters carry it.
Yeah, I will say, for as much fun as I have with On Stranger Tides, I am still, it still cringes me and hurts me inside seeing him like in like prim and proper uniforms, and he's got like the mayor's or like the Howard governor's wig on.
Yeah.
And I was just like, dude, no, this is not the guy from the first film. Like,
yeah,
he's a pirate.
Yeah, exactly. But at the end, spoiler alert, he renounces that, he pulls it off and he flips out the hat and puts the hat back on, and then we've got Barbossa back for another film.
Yeah.
I know, I agree with you. It was
still
very weird.
No.
It was very weird to see Barbossa so outside of what he was in the first movie.
I think I blocked that out of my memory. I forgot that was a thing. Like, I literally forgot about it until you're describing it now. I'm like, oh my gosh, that happened.
I will say that I loved in 2 at the end where he comes back, where he finally got to take the bite of that apple.
Yeah.
Mm.
And he actually got to taste it, you know, because he always wanted to taste the apple, but he couldn't. He couldn't. And he died at the beginning, or at the end of the first movie, and the apple rolls out of his hand because he was looking forward so much to that bite of that apple when he finally could be human flesh again.
So close.
So close, well, yet so far.
So that scene in particular that you're describing is a great like segue into kind of the mental health topics that I like took notes on, and there's the kind of like the context of what you're talking about is the big reveal at like the halfway point, where we're getting to see you know, the famous line of, you best start believing in ghost stories, Miss Turner, because you're in one. There's a monologue that accompanies that iconic line. It says, "For too long I've been parched and unable to quench it. For too long I've been starving to death and haven't died. I feel nothing, and not even the wind on my face, nor the spray of the sea, nor the warmth of a woman's touch." And what a great depiction to describe something like depression or just an overwhelming feeling of honestly kind of feeling like numb or even suicidal as well.
Yeah, I think that is, I never made that connection with that line, but hearing you say it, so I've dealt with depression since I was in fifth grade and have been on and off medication for it and stuff. And luckily I've been, you know, good for a few years. But yeah, that definitely is such a good description of it. But even like at a lesser level of extremity, even just like burnout that everyday people, you know, experience, like there is definitely a lot of correlations to way that's described, that inability to satisfy and find contentment in whatever is happening around you, circumstantial or not. I really like that.
Yeah, I do too. I think I've even felt some of that in terms of, like you just mentioned, burnout of too much going on, where even when it comes from a good place of trying to be responsible and, you know, trying to do your job and keep up with what life is throwing at you, but then you get burnt out and you can't necessarily think clearly. You start falling into these ruts mentally where the things that used to bring you joy are just kind of mundane and you're kind of going through the motions because you're so just out of touch with reality, in a sense, because you're just so burnt out from the routine of the whatever it is that's causing you to burn out. And so like that scene, or any of those, any of the crew members, any of the pirates in that are cursed for that matter, you know, it's like an example of they're existing, but not feeling anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that can relate to situations in life where you just have kind of fallen into this fog, this mental fog or emotional fog, and you can't seem to feel much.
Yeah.
I'm really glad you guys brought up the subject of burnout, because that's something that, you know, I've been a content creator now for the better part of 6 years, and, you know, it has been full of ups and it's been full of downs, but, you know, one of the things that I've struggled with most is rest and like taking time to like allow your body to just find peace. Not only that, but also to allow your mind to just kind of like shut off. And like I sat down for dinner before we started recording and I was like, all right, I just need something that's going to like just not have to, you know, pay attention to anything. Netflix has Kenan and Kel. All right.
Yes.
So here we go. And like that's been a great like just, you know, peaceful like recoup, like power nap, you know, while awake, for the better part of like a couple weeks now. And it's really allowed me to feel like re-energized and like refocused when focusing on making content, but also at the same time juggling the other things in my life, like my job and my marriage and personal relationships.
Yeah, totally. I just today was listening to a video about burnout for a mom's group that I'm a part of. And I actually was really hit by, they talked about doing life math. And that, you know, we're always constantly adding things to our lives because we get so excited about different things and then we get burnt out and then we're like, wait, how did this happen? But if you're adding things, you need to be subtracting things also. Like there has to be that life math so that you're creating balance in your life. You need to somehow, you know, they talk about businesses need to be in the black, not in the red. Like you have to find that balance of you're expending energy in order to content create or whatever it is that you're focused on. But then you also need to be, okay, now I'm adding things here. Now, where do I subtract things in order to find margin in my life, to find rest in my life, to find respite in my life?
Mm-hmm.
I just thought that was kind of a cool concept of like life math, making sure you're doing pluses and minuses.
And I think our society these days struggles a lot with the concept of slowing down.
Yeah.
I don't think that our society understands what that means anymore.
And how necessary it is.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you even look at, TikTok, you look at Instagram, you look at the essence of social media these days is a minute or less, if that, maybe 7 seconds of content, and we're constantly feeding our brains and scrolling and scrolling and scrolling and scrolling to what end? What are you looking for?
Right.
What are you actually looking for? Are you just trying to stimulate your brain every 7 seconds with something new? What that's also causing you is you're sitting in one place. What's causing you to do is to sit in one place, constantly stimulate your brain, but you're not actually going anywhere. And you're sitting there, but you're not actually resting. You know, there's such a thing as mental rest.
Yeah.
And people these days, they don't understand what that means. It's like, wait, you mean do nothing? Just look outside? That's boring. Well, why is it boring? Because you're used to constant stimulus that you've been trained, or dare I say it, conditioned to try to accept and do and whatever.
Man, I feel like you're just like reading my card right now. I've been like really trying to get better about like reading. And so like, that's been like a good form of like rest. Like I had like literally nothing to do for like 30, 40 minutes a day at work. And so I was like, all right, I brought this book with me. I'm going to dive in because I don't need to, you know, scroll to, you know, endless amounts, because again, the issue with social media and mental health is that it creates this doorway to where it, not only are you giving yourself false rest, but also at the same time, you're unwilling to kind of like comparing yourself to other creators or to other people and be like, oh man, like my life would be complete if I had this sponsorship, or my life would be so much better if I was able to date this person or be friends with that person, and so on and so forth. And that can also start to take steps towards things like depression and even anxiety and self-doubt. And so you start to kind of step away from important things like self-care and self-love, and your self-esteem suffers because of it.
Absolutely. And you nailed it on the head. I mean, especially with content creators that, you know, they're posting 3 times a day. I should be posting 3 times a day. What's wrong with me? Why don't I have the energy to do that? Well, who said you have to do that just because they do that? Like, just be you. Just be you.
I keep telling her no, it's not what you think. I keep telling her, you hear me say this all the time, I wish I could go back to the 90s.
Oh yeah.
Now I'm, yeah, there you go, yes. You know, then that's because I'm a 90s kid. Okay, an 80s kid would say I wish I could go back to the 80s. An early 2000s kid would probably say, I wish I could go back to the mid 2000s. All right. So I get that. I get it's conditional on when you had your childhood, but let me just explain this. The 90s into the early 2000s, things were simpler because you didn't have smartphones. What did you have? You had a cell phone that was maybe a brick. You had a flip phone that allowed you to download ringtones, and that's and have like Snake.
Yeah, Snake
on it.
Yeah, I was about to say, I was like, don't disrespect Snake.
Oh yeah, no. Snake is amazing. Snake is wonderful. I had many renditions of Snake, not on just my phone, but on other devices. But there was a way of just being able to turn on the PlayStation 1. And just play a game, not for content creation, not in order to try to beat your friends in something. It was to get a high score, or it was just to experience a game. And that was it. Nowadays, we're so fast paced, so there's this movement to, you know, be your own entrepreneur, and the onset of YouTube and Twitch and all of these online platforms allow content creators to be successful, and they're all great things. But I've even found myself thinking, I don't want to play this game yet because I want to record myself playing it for content. I want to stream it so that I can publicize my first reaction to this game. I am no longer able to just get myself into a mindset of, I just want to play this game because it's fun. And I have to stop myself and realize, wait a minute, I was there, you know, 15 years ago. I was there in that place where I would play games just for fun because I enjoyed the story or I enjoyed the gameplay. And that's because that's all I had. I didn't have a way to record my gameplay. Well, I
set up a camera in the back.
No. I plug the PlayStation RCA cords into my VCR and then I play it, record on my VHS. And then I plug one end of the audio into my camera so that I could talk while I'm playing the game so I could be the character playing the game and you could hear my voice. I got really creative, but I was creative back then. Like I did something with what I had, and now we have everything at our fingertips, but I feel like it stifles some people.
Yeah, I think that there's some element of what you're explaining that is the idea of being able to disconnect and being able to feel bored. And we've kind of lost the art of being bored because there's a lot of creativity that comes during that time, but also a lot of thought life that happens and examining yourself and dealing with whatever you might be dealing with in a moment when you have an hour to yourself and you don't have, the demands of whatever else is going on in the world, mm-hmm. TikTok or Instagram scrolling, you've got an hour of, I'm just going to sit and like process my feelings, or I'm going to watch this movie and then I can process the movie without mm-hmm. having to go on to the next thing in this rush of life, and the disconnect that we can have in a good way. Taking breaks from social media is so good for that.
Yeah. I took a break last week from social media and it was marvelous.
Yeah.
And by the time Sunday rolled around, I was like, wow, I haven't actually posted anything all week. This feels amazing.
Mm-hmm. Well, and to that point, I read somewhere, it may have been a Facebook post, ironically, but back in the 90s, you maybe got one piece of bad news a week, if that, maybe. You maybe see it on the news, you maybe hear it word of mouth from neighbors or something.
Or you read the newspaper.
Oh.
Whatever that is.
And now you are seeing bad news every hour, if not sooner. Everyone, and not just you, but everyone around you is seeing and experiencing in some way, shape, or form bad news. What does that do to you mentally, emotionally, over extended amounts of time? And I've succumb to that too, where I've why am I just so sad and upset right now? Well, it's because I keep reading these posts about things going on that I probably should just let lie. And
toddler let himself out of his room. I'm going to go get him and put him back.
Well, so on the flip side of that, there's another scene in the very beginning. It's probably within the first 10 minutes of this movie, and we're introduced to a very young Elizabeth. We're introduced to Gibbs. We're introduced to kind of a large, kind of more like the royal side of the Caribbean. And Gibbs says a line where they first bring Will on board. He's like, everyone else is thinking it. I'll say it. It's pirates. There's like this stigma around saying the word pirates. And I think on the flip side of what you guys are talking about, wow, yes, I'm a proponent for social media being a negative influence on if there's too much time spent on it and too much screen time. Like, it definitely has a definite negative effect on your mental health. Also, with Justin, what you're saying, like all the bad news that we kind of get, it just kind of seems like, whether it's TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, even doing a simple Google search sometimes, just brings up like bad news, and it has this effect on mental health. And on the flip side of that, social media has been a place where you're able to create things like communities and content like this that is being made purposely to deconstruct the stigma surrounding mental health, so people are reminded that they're not alone and that there are resources out there.
Absolutely. Yeah. So actually, about a year and a half ago, I had a miscarriage. Mm-hmm. And that was something that I felt totally alone in the situation. Just didn't know anything about it. Like, I had friends who had had that before, but I just didn't know any information about it. And I decided that when it happened, I was going to post about it on Facebook as a way to be like, I just dealt with this. If you've been through this, let me know. Like, I'm here for you. And maybe if you could be here for me and think about me. And out of the woodwork, hundreds of women were commenting on my post and talking to me about it. And I had no idea. And so that speaks to the power of social media, mm-hmm. of the ability to know you are not alone in whatever you are dealing with. There are people just like you dealing with almost the exact same scenario. And it just blew my mind. And I felt so, warm. This is like such a weird word, but I felt so warm that there were so many people like me out there and that I wasn't alone and that I wasn't, there wasn't a stigma to it anymore for me. Yeah. It wasn't validating. Embarrassing. It was validating. It wasn't embarrassing. Instead of it being this, we don't talk about this. It was like, no, we are going to talk about this because more people need to. And I just, I definitely love the power that social media can have and how it's affected even my life.
Yeah. I was actually shocked to know that whole topic was taboo. Like the whole, I know that's a side comment, but like, I was like, wait, people don't talk about miscarriages at all. This is actually like a thing. And why not? You know, but her posting about it opened the door for people to open themselves up. And maybe it's been something that they've been holding on to for a long time, not knowing whether they can talk to anybody, and in a sense, it could be very cathartic for them to be able to process it out loud, to someone else, as well as to the masses, that this happened to me. And I feel like there's a lot of people that hold on to things and they don't know where to turn. They're dealing with things inside that they're like, no one else could understand this. No one else would understand this. This is just too heavy, too weird, too negative. You know, it's like we've also created a space where if you're brave enough, you can step out and realize that there are a lot more people like you than you realize, and they all can rally around using these platforms.
So like, to speaking, you know, obviously I can't speak to a miscarriage because I don't have a uterus, but it is my understanding from friends that I know that have had an experience that there's a lot of depression and a lot of just anger and a lot of like mixed emotions that come along with that experience. And I think the reason why, Justin, to your point of like it being taboo, is because, you know, it goes hand in hand with so much of those mental health things that we don't like to talk about because it makes us feel uncomfortable. But the reality is that the more that we talk about it, the more that we normalize it, the more we educate ourselves, the less that you're raising up generations that feel like they can actually be open and vulnerable, and that it's okay not to be okay, and that you don't have to project this social media prince and princess 24/7, that, you know, we are not Disney characters. We are actual human beings that go through depression, anxiety, addiction, etc. And we all feel those things. And I think Gibbs, like, talking about pirates in the company of like royalty was like this, like, you can't talk about this kind of thing. And we're, for as much progression as a culture as we're getting, you still have a lot of those people that still don't like to talk about it. And mm-hmm. we need to educate ourselves and be okay to not, you know, be okay.
Yeah. Right. To be human, to understand what it means to be human and realize that we have other people around us who are just as human as we are, you know?
Yeah, to get comfortable with the uncomfortable and know that that is a part of being human.
Yeah.
Is that
absolutely
those dark places, they are a part of being human.
How would you guys like to help us get mental health resources into schools, conventions, and other events? Well, now you can. Simply go to patreon.com/victimsandvillains for as little as $1 a month. You guys can help us get mental health resources into current and upcoming generations, educate, and break down stigma surrounding mental health, suicide, and depression. And you get exclusive content that you can't get anywhere else. And you guys can tell us which Nicolas Cage movie you want us to cover, and we'll do it. All it takes to get started is to go to patreon.com/victimsandvillains or simply click the link in the episode description wherever you guys are currently listening or streaming this episode. Pick your tier and get started today. Yes, it's that simple. So quickly select the tier that you want and help us get hope into the hands of the depressed and the suicidal today. It's a part of doing life together, because I think you could see a little bit of it in Will's life throughout the character journey throughout this first film, where it's like, okay, like I am gonna use Jack just to get back to Elizabeth, and then he ends up essentially going through like some really cruddy situations with these characters throughout not just this film but the first trilogy of this franchise. And mm-hmm. you start to really kind of see that that's what life is about the people that are going to get down in the trenches with you and walk with you and cry with you and bleed with you. Like, that's what life is all about.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, there's, I think when social media first started coming out, however many years ago, 2009. Hey,
bring it back to MySpace.
You still see this to a certain extent with a lot of people, but especially in the beginning stages, it was all the best bits of your life. People would see your life on the screen and be like, wow, they have it all together. You know, I want what they've got. Because no one who would post the bad things going on. You post your highlights, your best of. And, you know, it kind of creates this culture where we all perceive facades of everybody.
Right.
And now in recent years, now utilizing social media in these communities, like we've talked about, we're seeing people be able to kind of open up more and post with, you know, this is what I'm dealing with. Are any of you dealing with this as well? Can I help, or can you help me? And creating this community of support. So no longer are we just seeing the best of, we're getting to see a little bit more real life. Now I'm not saying that that's the way it is across the board, because I'm sure that there's a high majority of people who are still just posting their best of, or they don't post much at all. And so you only get like little bits at a time. And so right. you can't really base someone's life off of what you see them post. But in those isolated situations where someone reaches out and says, I just had someone in my family pass away. And then you have people rally around that person in such a way that maybe didn't happen before we had those platforms. And it allows people from in circles of their life that maybe they never thought they would meet again, come back around and say, oh, my condolences, I'm sorry for your loss. And then you realize, oh, wow, that, you know, those people still took the time to reach out to me.
I think that the word you used earlier, Josh, is community. Like, there is a community that has formed on social media platforms that's helping to destigmatize all of these mental illnesses and the like.
Yeah. And so I want to encourage you guys that if you guys are looking for a community, check out Victims and Villains on any social media. All of that is going to be in the show notes below. I can also speak for the communities that both Heather and Justin. It's very warm, very inviting, and they're funny people too. So there's that.
Funny looking, maybe.
But one last time, we just want to encourage you guys that if you or someone you know is listening to this right now and you're struggling with suicide, addiction, self-harm, depression, anxiety, or suicide, to please reach out. There's our mental health resource libraries in the show notes wherever you guys are currently listening or streaming this episode, along with the links for Justin and Heather, which they're going to give to us one more time.
Yeah, so Twitch, TikTok, Instagram, Patreon, and Fanhouse, Key Lime Pixie with an underscore at the end.
And I am on Instagram as The Laughing Raptor underscore, TikTok, The Laughing Raptor, YouTube, The Laughing Raptor, and Twitch, Laughing Raptor.
Well, you guys can check us, follow us everywhere. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Twitch, Patreon, one-time donations. You guys can submit your films to our film festival for next year. All of that stuff can be found in the show notes below. And of course, you guys can follow us wherever you guys get your podcasts from. Until next time, remember that this is the tale of Captain Jack Sparrow.